PopSpotting 191.
Monday, January 9th, 2012.
Yes, commit. Jump. 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 And I catch you. Now.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Movie Monday, and today we're going to talk about Mission Impossible 4, Ghost Protocol, starring Tom Cruise, Simon Pegg, Paula Patton, Jeremy Renner, and Michael Nyquist from the original version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
That's right. Now, this film was directed by Brad Bird, he of The Incredibles, The Iron Giant. It was produced by Tom Cruise and J.J. Abrams, he of Lost. And we weren't sure what we were going to talk about this week, but over on Facebook, Matt said we had to see MI4, as did Jeffrey on Twitter, and others as well, really gave strong thumbs up to this action film. And we did miss its big opening in December. We didn't catch up with it during the holiday season, but it was number one for 4 weeks straight, only this weekend, finally being toppled. So we did race out and catch it. Jen, how did you like this fourth installment, the return to the big screen of Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol?
I thought it was the prettiest, most entertaining car commercial I've ever seen.
Well, yes, there's a lot of product placement here. I figured we were going to get to that, but that's an interesting first impression. But you did say entertaining and pretty. I mean, is it a car commercial that you would want to see again, or is worth seeing?
It is worth seeing if you are a J.J. Abrams fangirl like me. There are tons of little Abramsian touches. Josh Holloway is in this movie. I think there are a lot of very clever moments, and I think the action is pretty good. I was just hoping for something not as lightweight. I didn't want to see a bunch of BMWs. I wanted something a little smarter, and J.J. Abrams succeeds in making a very smart action film in this movie, but it's also a little bit silly and a little bit illogical and kind of messy.
Well, you know, like Sherlock Holmes, which we recently reviewed, I just wasn't expecting any Oscar-winning performances or deep thinking. I did want to have fun. I wanted to see some great action set pieces and awesome stunts, and I am certain that I got my money's worth there. And, you know, sure, yes, there were some quibbles that I had. The product placement, for sure. One big Apple commercial or BMW, I mean, but the first Mission Impossible was a big Apple commercial, and I'm an Apple fan. I won't complain too much. I thought there were some plot twists and little issues that came up more than once, and things that when they became repetitive became a little distracting, you know, not as interesting. But really, it is about those big, giant, ambitious action, you know, scenes where they just do the incredible things that just blow your mind. And I think that's why I still came away, you know, happy with this movie. There were actual breathtaking moments where I held my breath, where I'm gripping my chair. And you know, that's something that I'm always going to give this film credit for.
The opening with Holloway in Budapest is very surprising. There's a whole sequence in a Moscow prison. But the biggest showstopper of the film is the sequence in the Burj Khalifa Tower in Dubai. There's a sequence in Mumbai, and they're doing their thing, and it just moves right along. But these scenes are so impressive that in the scenes where they have to have important conversations, they felt very mechanical. They just felt like breaks in the action between all of these really great set pieces.
Well, you know, certainly the Dubai Tower, the tallest building, the tallest freestanding structure on the planet, and I mean, it's in all of the commercials. It's why you might want to go out and see it in IMAX. Our listeners did recommend that. We just don't have an IMAX near us, and so that's why you'll go out and see this movie. I think that's why you'll enjoy this movie, but I can hear what you're saying, because, you know, this is a Brad Bird film, and from him, and including Abrams, we would expect also some good character development, some good emotional moments, some actual stakes, but unfortunately, I think they're so ambitious on the action side that even I, as someone who would be a little critical of something being too shallow, felt that they didn't invest as much time in the story as they could have, or at least in the characters that they could have, so that even I, watching the film, was waiting for these, you know, serious conversations and backstories and discussions to end, because I was impatient to see the next big exciting thing that they did.
I liked that in the beginning of the film, the action got kind of interesting because the team lost all their access to their resources and to their technology, so they had to go undercover and go on the run. They were disavowed, and they had to scrape by with their wits, except it didn't really end up like that.
Well, that occurred to me as well. We've had the same discussion about Chuck, the TV show, mm-hmm. and other movies where, you know, even with, whether it's Mission Impossible or James Bond, you kind of want to put them in a situation where you think they might potentially not succeed. And the problem with these franchises is that because they've got so much backing, you know, how big of a challenge is it actually going to be? So yes, I agree. They set it up. You're like, okay, Ghost Protocol. We are now Ghosts. We cannot be the same operation that we always were. And that could have been interesting, but it didn't take them long before they make the right friend. And the next thing you know, like you said, they're driving around the fanciest BMWs and going to the fanciest parties. So, you know, I don't think they, you know, had to struggle quite as much as they could have there.
So when did Russians become the in vogue bad guys again?
Well, you know, they're coming back into vogue. I think they're becoming popular, which is, I thought, kind of interesting because, you know, 20 years ago, they were the pinnacle of the bad guys. Then turned out they weren't quite as big of a threat for these national political intrigue stories. And we had to get creative. Hollywood had to try to find some other either nationality or ethnic group to pick on without offending everybody. So in a way, I like that we went full circle. It is Mission Impossible. It's the Ruskies. But they came up with a way, even invoking the Cold War, that it still seemed plausible to happen in this day and age.
But they're Hollywood Russians. They're generic Russians. There's no attempt to, like, make them interesting. They're just such generic bad guys, and Russians are fine as long as you can make them a little bit different. These are your standard bad guy Russians that you've seen all along in, like, James Bond movies and Hunt for Red October. I mean, I like my bad guys bad, but I like them with a little bit of substance.
Well,
too.
I like the mention of Hunt for Red October. I will probably get to that. I mean, they did kind of invoke some of that old feeling about this sort of political intrigue. And again, it's not that these Russians were twirling their mustaches and plotting the demise of the United States. They're kind of forced into action through sabotage and, you know, other things. So it's not really Russia going against us. But I can see what you're saying, too. I mean, I would have to say, and going back to maybe the how I desired a little more character development or explorations of it, is that the motivations of the bad guy and what he's trying to do is interesting. And I think that it's a kind of a cool intellectual twist that brings sort of real terror to the planet. On the other hand, we spent very little time with the bad guys. It wasn't like your typical spy movie, because they didn't have their, you know, long soliloquies with the mood lighting and the crackling thunder. I mean, you got a college lecture, if anything. Mm-hmm. So when you have Michael Nyquist, who I was glad to see back on screen, I didn't feel I really knew what he was up to. He had some, you know, he had some compatriots working with him, people he was forcing to work with him, people who agreed with him. There was the female assassin, Lea Seydoux, and she was interesting too, but I couldn't keep all of the bad guys straight. Who was hired by the bad guys? Who was the actual bad guy? Who was somebody forced to work with the bad guy? And all of these things do play a part. And then you bring in the masks, and they rip off a mask, and somebody you thought was one guy is somebody else. And because I couldn't understand what the bad guys were up to, it was hard to really cheer for the Impossible Mission Force to beat them. I just wanted the Impossible Mission Force to survive. I think it was more a movie set up to say that, is the Impossible Mission Force going to exist at all, rather than are they going to triumph over this particular threat.
Well, this is an action film, so maybe it's really kind of silly for us to be talking about character motivation and development. And like you said, the Khalifa Tower sequence was the centerpiece of this movie. That's where their budget went, I think, most of it. I mean, around us, there were audible gasps from the audience, and I felt legitimately dizzy watching Tom Cruise going around this building. And the whole sequence is pretty, it's intense. There's a dust storm and a very unusual car chase, and the whole thing was the high point of the film, and I really felt, though, that it got less interesting from there.
Well, I think it might be the fault of the marketing. You're looking forward to it. I also do agree that in terms of structure, and I felt the same thing about Sherlock Holmes, too, that there were some sequences in that movie that were really great, and there were some sequences that weren't so strong, and for whatever reason, because of the order they're presented, you hit the climax early on, and then it is kind of downhill from there. The rest of the sequences are solid. I don't think I have any major complaints, but after seeing what you saw when they're basically down in the plumbing underneath the rich man's mansion or running around in a TV station, that's considerably less visually interesting. So I can definitely see what you're saying there.
I felt the special effects were equally hit or miss. They were really good in some places, like on the tower, and howlingly bad in others, like the Kremlin. The end of the Kremlin sequence was just so cringeworthy.
Well, I thought they weren't that bad. I mean, I thought that they did what they needed to do. It is ILM. Maybe I just have a soft spot for that particular effects house. I will agree that this movie and probably any action film, anything that we're going to talk about, it just continues to prove that physical effects beat CGI. You know, when they're actually doing things, whether it's with a tiny little model or really putting somebody out in danger, that will still come through versus a computer-generated image of danger, you know. So I can see, you know, maybe seeing too many special effects. I mean, we really can't stand the Transformers films for that reason, mm-hmm. but I thought that we got a good amount of it, and in fact that on balance that this Mission Impossible film was more on the physical effects side for the most part, and on that front at least a little more effective. I do think that when we're talking about what we saw on screen, you know, the technology and the toys that they got to play with, you know, whether it's James Bond and M and all the gadgets there, you know, this movie and this franchise always goes there, and so that's a lot of fun. As a nerd, I can see it, but if I could get to one of the quibbles that I mentioned having with this film, is that the movie couldn't decide if these cool tools were cool and powerful and effective, or if they were major liabilities and points of failure. And I can see, you know, some going this way and some going that way, so you at least can't be completely sure that everything's going to work out. But things just kind of sort of zapped and glitched out every single time, to the point that yeah. it was almost comedic there.
I noticed that, and I thought the gadgets in themselves were, they weren't explained very well. Like, at one point, Jeremy Renner has to be in a suit made of magnets, and I didn't really fully understand why Renner had to be in the shaft wearing this magnet suit. I felt like I could have enjoyed it more if I had known exactly what his objective was.
Well, you know, I think they explained that, you know, he had to get to something, and that's why he needs the suit. And actually, at the very same time, Paula Patton has a separate mission with, I think, an equally sort of ludicrous setup. So I do agree that sometimes they had an idea of a visual in their head that they would bend over backwards to achieve, even if the story to get you there, you know, really didn't support it.
Okay, and here is another generic spy movie intrigue quibble. And it's not this movie specifically, although it is. How come male secret agents, when they have to seduce somebody in order to get information, the woman is always beautiful and stunning and attractive, but
oh
when
boy.
A sexy female agent has to seduce a man to get the same information, said man has to be as unattractive and slimy as humanly possible? Why can't a hot secret agent try to get into the pants of a good-looking, dashing guy?
Wow. I'm not sure if I want to go there. I mean, yes, I think you're raising an objection to a much larger archetype here than particularly to this film. Maybe it's because if a guy is powerful, he probably didn't get there on the basis of his look. I don't know. See, I'm treading on thin ice here. But that was Anil Kapoor. So right. At least a familiar face. He was in...
Slumdog Millionaire. He was a sleazy game show host.
That's right. And actually, maybe now that you point that out, I think maybe he could have been the same character in both of these movies. But a fair point. But as far as Paula Patton goes, and maybe we can get to performances here, I don't want to dismiss her or let people think that she is, you know, in that same bin of the so-called tough female agent who's actually just sexy and, you know, is just sort of made up and or said to be tough. I think that if there's anything I liked about her is that she had a strong presence. She could fill the screen as well as Tom Cruise, and I thought that she had strength. I was actually wondering, who is she? She's got such a great presence. She must be a well-known actress, but I think that this is one of her bigger roles.
It is definitely one of her bigger roles, but you're right. She has a face that reminds me of a bunch of different actresses, but I think she did a really good job in this film. I think at one point they really wanted Halle Berry to be an action star because she was in the X-Men films, but I think Paula Patton is a much more believable action star than Halle Berry could have been.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the, you know, of the many names running through my head. I was like, I don't know who this person is, but she's so fantastic. In fact, when she's put in the position to do this seduction, when she's made to wear a nice dress and do this duty that female secret agents always seem to have to do, I thought that Paula Patton just played it perfectly because she's just a little awkward. She's not actually, you know, comfortable with pulling off this role. And whether it was her performance or the way the character was written, I thought that it went off pretty good. Now, Tom Cruise, we should talk about him. I mean, he's the star of this franchise, and he's not exactly, I mean, he's kind of become kind of the punchline in his personal life. I didn't really know if I was ready to watch him be a leading man again. In this film, I thought that he was good in the sense that he's not being played up as a pretty boy anymore, as dashing and irresistible. I think that, you know, they let him get the sort of long hair hair, sort of Harry tough look, and he's going more lone wolf than super sexy secret agent, at least.
Well, Ethan Hunt is kind of going through a crisis in his personal life, as we find out, and I think that's probably turned him into somebody who's a little bit more reserved and a little bit more quiet, and I think Tom Cruise is not quite as pretty as he used to be. They do dare to make him look less than sparkling like he looks in Top Gun, but I think that goes along with the change in his character, and I like seeing this version of Ethan Hunt.
Well, what I'll say is that he didn't dominate the screen. I mean, I think that he shared it well with Paula Patton and the other members of his team. In fact, we should mention Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg is back. Well, Simon Pegg is Simon Pegg. I mean, he plays whatever it is he plays in almost every film. He's the comedic relief. He's nervous and twitchy. He can't stop talking. He's funny. And, you know, he was I think, a good addition to this mix.
Well, you know, I saw a Doctor Who episode where Simon Pegg was the villain, and I thought he was great in that role, and I would love to see him as a Bond villain. I think he could do it. I think he could be a sadistic badass, and I think if they're going to do more Bond films, they should really consider Simon Pegg as a villain.
Well, you know, I was about to say, I would like to see him be a little more evil. You know, I think that his being funny when he's nervous is kind of a crutch, and so he's not able to do as much as I think he could have in this film. And the other member of the team, sort of the new addition, Jeremy Renner, and, you know, solid actor. He was in The Hurt Locker, in The Town. I thought he was good because when he's introduced to be so uninteresting that you know that there's going to be more to his story, that there's a past, that there's something he's hiding, and it does get revealed, and I thought that he conveyed sort of both sides of that coin very well.
He was definitely the best part of The Town. The Town was the movie I was not crazy about, but he was definitely the best part of it, and I think that he was maybe the best part of this film too, and I think we learned just enough about his character that if they did make another sequel, I think he would be a really great addition to the cast.
Well, they are absolutely going to make a sequel. This movie made just way too much money. So Mission Impossible 5, certainly on the way, probably with the exact same team. You know, my only complaint about Renner's character, I mean, it's one of the quibbles that I had, is that because of the twist that they reveal with his character midway through, you go back and remember how he was introduced, and it doesn't seem to be in congruence with what they reveal
because of the way he was at first.
But again, I mean, a solid cast, decent performances for an action film. I did want to mention the music for this film. Michael Giacchino, he of Lost and many other great soundtracks. He did Mission Impossible 3. He does, I think, a solid job here because, yes, you've got the opening sequence where he gets to play with the Mission Impossible theme. And actually, I thought the title sequence was kind of cool in the sense that it secretly telegraphs the sort of the plot of the movie that you're about to see. But so Michael Giacchino's music is solid, and then you as things start to build up, even I'm starting to anticipate how is he going to work these variations to get to the Mission Impossible theme. But you mentioned Hunt for Red October. I don't think that that's, you know, an accidental comparison. He does seem to have this opportunity to act as if he had the opportunity to do the soundtrack to that movie.
Yeah, he takes what's going on in the film and he writes themes inspired, for instance, by Bollywood and from the score for Hunt for Red October, but he puts his own personal stamp on it. And he makes a really unique soundtrack in that he's really experimenting with a bunch of different styles.
Yeah, he's going international, and but he does have a baseline to work with. He does have a very well-known theme to riff off. So I did enjoy the music. I remember actually thinking about it and enjoying it and tapping my fingers and saying that, you know, I think I'm going to check out this soundtrack. So I did want to mention it. So, all right, that's Mission Impossible 4, Ghost Protocol, starring Tom Cruise, Simon Pegg, Paula Patton, Jeremy Renner, and Michael Nyquist. It was directed by Brad Bird and produced in part by J.J. Abrams. Jen, on the pop spotting scale of 1 through 5, what do you give this film?
3.5.
All right, same score you gave Sherlock Holmes. I'm going to give it 3.5 as well, though, a little bit more. I think I enjoyed it more. So that gives you a total pop spotting score of 7 for Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. Now, obviously, we're not the only people who saw this film, and a lot of you did and encouraged us to see it. We want to know if you think that we were on target here, or if our missile just sort of bounced off the top of a building and landed in a bay somewhere. So please send us your feedback about this or any other film you're enjoying.
You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net. You can leave a comment on the blog at popspotting.net, or best of all, you can leave a voicemail that we can share on the show at 815-310-0808.
You can also post on our Facebook page page at facebook.com/popspotting, and you can catch us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
Come back tomorrow for TV Tuesday, where we'll get on a horse-drawn carriage and go down to Downton Abbey.
If you enjoy our podcast, we hope you'll take a moment to share it with your friends and family, and we really are appreciative of those of you who have taken the time to rate us and review us in the iTunes podcast directory. That's one of the best ways to bring new listeners into the fold.
Thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and mahalo to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
I'm Jen.
Aloha.